It's Tuesday, December 26, 2023, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. And this week we're going to have a little fun, as opposed to the tiresome slog that has come to characterize The Gist low these many years. I'm going to play a couple new interviews this week. I'm going to play a couple great old interviews. But I'm also going to play stuff that predates not just season two of The Gist, but The Gist overall. In fact, given that it is December 26th, I want to revisit a piece that ran exactly 20 years ago today. Kind of crazy to me, at least, that I have a 20-year track record, even longer. I can prove that it ran 20 years ago today on the program Day to Day from NPR. It's a short little piece, and here goes.
It's not only for Christmas presents that thank you notes must be written. Birthday gifts deserve similar expressions of thanks. But how thankful should you be if you were born on the day after Christmas? Day to Day's Mike Pesca did some research about people who were born on this date, and he came up with this rather disturbing information.
Imagine today, of all days, a small child with arms still outstretched, demanding more presents. Kind of stomach-churning. It is therefore that those who have the December 26th birthday are sure to have some problems later in life. Just take a look at some of the famous people born today. First, Mao Zedong. According to the Encyclopedia of Genocide, he killed 38 million people. Then there's Richard Widmark, who pushed an old lady down the stairs in Kiss of Death. Also on the list, Phil Spector, alleged murderer and confirmed weirdo. Also born today, Charles Babbage. You're saying Charles Babbage, the British mathematician and father of computing? Yes, that Charles Babbage. And by the way, nice Babbage knowledge. But did you know that during his lifetime, Babbage was best known for his hatred of public music and puppet shows, as immortalized in his 1864 tract Observation of Street Nuisances? So please, parents of children celebrating a birthday today, give the little gal or fella a hug. Your kid will thank you, and maybe, just maybe, they won't develop a lifelong hatred of street puppets.
That's Day to Day's Mike Pesca.
Seemed like the host really, really enjoyed that. So stick with me. We're going to play a couple of classic Pesca pieces that you didn't even know exist. They originally aired on NPR. Actually, one of them aired on the media. We're going to talk about record scratches. Maybe I'll sing a song about Chris Christie. And then my history interrogating words that start with letters. Stay tuned for all of that. So a few weeks ago, we did a story on the sludge train, and my reverie was scored with appropriate dreamlike music scored by Joel Patterson, and it was interrupted. Here, listen to how it was interrupted. Speed and transit that defines humanity's industry and wisdom. So yeah, in New Jersey, they built the bridge too low for the sludge barge. Okay then, I will let you in on this. When we aired that sludge train piece on the Weekend Best Of show, I asked for the record scratch to be taken out. Why? Well, I felt that it was unmotivated in the moment, and I do have sort of a history of chronicling what you could describe as inappropriate record scratches. In fact, some say that I am the primary radio chronicler of excessive record scratches in the Western Hemisphere. Yeah, so I do have this history, and I did not want this history to be sullied or tarnished or marred. What I'm saying is, I did not want my record scratched. So I will play this for you today. It's a piece I did for the public radio program, the WNYC program on the media. The year was 2001. So 22 and a half years ago, it was summer of 2001. And this piece is as timely now as it was then. To orient you, I was the producer at large on the program then. Great title, producer at large. Is there anything you can't do or have to do? And we used to do fun considerations of quirky media things. It was pre-9/11. We were all so innocent. So the context was earlier in the segment preceding this was Rex Doan talking about the death of the 45. And he got a lot right. He said, and I quote, "Inevitably, CDs too will be forced into an extinction of their own by some new technology." That is the context you need to know. We're coming out of a piece on singles, on 45s, and that will make host Brooke Gladstone's introduction make the most sense possible. Here goes.
Singles are dying. Vinyl records are almost dead. Recorded music as a whole is taking a hit because of MP3 and Napster. But we at On the Media have noted a counter trend. It seems that the public appetite for the sound effect does not in any way track with the public's appetite for records themselves. The scratch is everywhere, including in this report by On the Media's producer at large, Mike Pesca.
In a Bud Light commercial that's currently airing, a young couple walk into a jewelry store and the woman falls in love with a diamond ring. Just as the guy starts to think about how much this'll set him back, he is distracted. What's this?
You're fantastic.
Beckoning to him through the window is a beautiful woman holding a bottle of Bud Light. "Do you mean me?" his gestures say. The beautiful woman crooks a finger. The guy is drawn to her cold-filtered siren song. He can't believe it. This sort of stuff never happens to...
God! Who's the guy? Who is this guy?
For the great taste that won't fill you up and never let you down.
Oh, no. The woman wasn't beckoning to him at all. She was shooting a Bud Light commercial. Within this, the Bud Light commercial we're talking about. The guy is now forced to buy his fiancé a bigger diamond. And the cue that his world was about to lose all color, cut, and clarity? The sound effect, which says, whoa, wait a minute. NBC's promo department seems particularly enthrall of the record scratch.
Tuesday on an all-new Frasier, Daphne's back, and Niles has big news.
We're going to consummate our relationship.
What?
And for Saturday Night Live?
And now something every mother wants to hear.
On my hoo-ha.
It's the new Saturday Night Live primetime special.
The screech in the Bud Light commercial may have been in context. Perhaps they were playing a record on the set of the commercial within the commercial and suddenly yanked it off. But Frasier and Saturday Night Live, they just used the scratch as scratch. Then there's this spot for AT&T, where two teenage boys need a ride home after a Destiny's Child concert.
Hop on in, guys.
And who pulls up in an abandoned parking lot but the band itself?
File this under never. Need a ride?
Come on, kids, get real. Destiny's Child giving you a ride home in their limo, and on top of that, their hit singles being played off of vinyl? According to Record Industry Association of America statistics, vinyl records account for less than 1% of all recorded music sold. But according to Baker Smith, the director of the Destiny's Child ad, commercials use record screeches and scratches like they're going out of style. Which, of course, they are.
We always know, you know, at the end of the meeting, we haven't cracked it. Someone goes, well, we can always put a record scratch on it. Like, oh, good job, Bob. Way to go, Fred. Sort of congratulate ourselves, and it's going to be funny now, and move on. So I think that the record scratch is so much a part of our culture comedically that it's probably going to be in the Smithsonian someday.
Even after he decides to use the record scratch, Smith still has choices.
There's different ones. There's a rip, you know, I feel very passionate about the record scratch.
I mean, it's very rare that I'm writing anything that couldn't benefit from a vinyl record scratch.
John Abood is co-founder of ModernHumorist.com. He, too, is no stranger to the lure of the scratch.
Call me a hack, but I tend to insert that wherever possible.
One place Abood used the scratch, actually he admitted it was the only place, was on a project for Microsoft. The software maker hired him to design a website about the little paperclip character that pops up in Microsoft Word whenever you try to write a letter. Microsoft's selling point was that their new word processing program wouldn't annoy users with this paperclip feature. They used Gilbert Gottfried to play the paperclip and the record screech to hammer the point home.
Why, hello there. As soon as I finish this proposal,
It looks like you're writing a letter.
Would
you like help? You.
To Abood, the record scratch harkens to days gone by.
It wasn't uncommon at the turn of the century for a pair of lovers to be dancing to a phonograph in their parlor when the jilted suitor would burst into the room and, you know, rip the needle off the phonograph, and the lover's reverie would be interrupted by this, you know, brutish thug. And that was a classic symbol that carried on into many of our cartoons, many of our commercials. It's part of our collective unconscious.
Abood's jilted suitor scenario supposes the record is a 78 being played on a Victrola, hardly a reference for the average Destiny's Child fan. I asked real live teenagers, Niaja Hoskins and Charmaine Sattler, what they thought the sound effect was.
A recording that just stopped, like, ripping.
What is that sound?
I have no idea.
You don't know what that sound is?
What, a recording stopping?
Yeah.
A recording stopping.
So what would produce that rip?
Oh, pausing the tape or the recording. I don't know.
What about like a vinyl record?
I know, I saw it on TV, makes that noise.
Have you ever seen that in real life?
I don't think so.
As a media moves towards extinction, it leaves artifacts behind. We listen to a dial tone before we dial the phone, even though almost all phones are made with buttons. The record scratch was once an annoying consequence of misusing the medium, but now it's genuine music. When it comes to vinyl, it may be that the only thing that avoids the slag heap of history is the slag itself. For On the Media, I'm Mike Pesca. So I was going over some old pieces that I did, and this one, I think, explains a lot of my orientation, explains some of my latter-day stances. The year was 2007. It was August 8th. The show was Day to Day, and this story is called New York City May Ban Certain Words. You will hear hosts Alex Chadwick and Madeline Brand talk us into a piece that just did record scratches. Has its own fair share of pretty on-the-nose sound effects, but I stand by this piece.
This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand.
I'm Alex Chadwick. New York City Council, fresh off a symbolic moratorium on the N-word, is hunting new letters every day.
A resolution now before the council would ban the B-word, rhymes with witch, and the H-word rhymes with oh-no.
Ho, ho, ho.
Okay, Santa. Okay, a little warning. You'll hear those words in their full glory later in this report. From the gentility capital of the world, here is our own Mike Pesca.
The New York City Council, in banning the word oh, come on. They introduced a resolution which, and I quote, seeks to join a national conversation about the appropriateness of the pejorative use of terms like and how can I report on if I can't say oh, son of a Darlene Mealy is the councilwoman who introduced the symbolic moratorium. She doesn't use the actual word in favor of the letter B.
The same as the N-word, it degrades women, calling them Bs. And if we don't subject that to at least some censorship, we lost.
But there are literally thousands of racist and sexist slurs uttered every day in New York, and that's just coming from my downstairs neighbor. So where does banning specific words end? Councilmember Mealy is most offended by words that have pervaded popular culture.
Someone did call me of the Orthodox sect, and he said, well, some people call us kites.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I understand that. I said, but do they sing about it in their lyrics? Do they say it to you every day? That's why B and ho and N is a words that we need to take out.
The resolution itself specifically cites rap music. And in a first in municipal history, quotes Queen Latifah, every time I hear a brother. Queen Latifah's efforts were belittled in the resolution. So I wondered what Councilmember Mealy would make of the Meredith Brooks song, which sought to reclaim the modern variant of strumpet or trollop. I played her this hit, which went to number 2 in 1997.
I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother.
So I don't have Meredith Brooks in the studio here with me, but it seems to me like what she was saying is that she's talking about herself. It's not a man calling that woman a name. Do you object to that?
Yes, I do. Why would we degrade ourselves? I know I'm more than a four-legged dog. And being a four-legged dog, when dogs get in heat, they hump and do whatever they want to do to the female bee dog.
When I did get a hold of Meredith Brooks a few hours later, she said no animals were humped in the making of this song.
Bitch, for me, in that particular context, was my no. It was a different thing for everybody, but for me, it was my no. I wasn't able to say no very well, and I'd kind of have to muster it all up and like, no, you know, so it was my strength. It's a power word.
Brooks, by the way, has just come out with a children's album with no naughty language on it at all. One place you will find the B word happens to be at the National Organization for Women. Sonia Osorio is the president of the New York City chapter of NOW.
One of the magazines we have on our coffee table and a book that we have on our coffee table is the magazine called Bitch. And there's another one, it's a new book about career success that's called Ambitious.
Osorio thinks a conversation about the impact of words is good. Having the government lead the conversation through coercion is bad.
You know, if it was a real resolution, that would be very dangerous territory to ban words and free speech. But no one's going to get arrested for it. There aren't any penalties.
So the best thing about the resolution is that it's toothless.
Yeah, exactly.
Toothless and popular, at least among legislators. The resolution was introduced with 19 co-sponsors. Crunch the numbers on the 51-member council, and you'll see that 26 votes assure passage, and there are 26 letters in the alphabet. So if each council member gets to ban his or her own letter, all the votes will be locked up. And once that happens, no one in New York City will ever hear an uncivil utterance again. Mike Pesca, PR News, YC. And finally, and this is sad, I wanted to play another piece that I did about Chris Christie before he was governor of New Jersey. He was the U.S. attorney, and it doesn't even exist. It was on the NPR site, and the only remnant of it existing is that I did a song about Chris Christie and his prosecution of different corrupt New York politicians. So the entire Chris Christie interview is lost. My work is lost. But this wacky song that I put together, on NPR, we didn't have to really do a report a day or every other day. So I had a few days to get some professionals involved. We mixed it. I don't know if it worked. I was swinging for the fences as I was doing it. And it was about corruption in New Jersey. I incorporated it into the piece of Chris Christie, and then we put it up on the web. Hey, if you want to listen to the whole song, I don't have metrics on that. I suppose, well, you know what? I'm going to play this whole song here for you. And then we could go into the credits as I say goodbye.
Let's start with Bob Januszewski, or Dem Party Chair Charlie Cart, or Richard Vuola, whose taste of payola proved not to be very smart. Five on the Pleasantville School Board, we may have made thousands combined. Assemblyman Hackett was part of a racket, leaving a scoundrel behind. Chris Christie, U.S. Attorney, bust the paws on the take. Joe Scarpelli had knees of jelly, just like John Westlake. Sharp James was mayor of Newark, a real graft entrepreneur. The system is broken, just look at Hoboken, Russo's doing time in the stir. New Brunswick director of housing
fixed up his own house instead.
And Jory Amoff is quite a dilemma.
Took the roof, bathroom, and shed.
And a furnace.
You can't pocket charity proceeds.
Mayor Foy may have just missed that point.
And Frank Giabatte should learn some karate. He's got 4 more years in the joint.
Even with good behavior.
Sad song.
And that's it for today's show. The Gist was produced by Corey Wara and Joel Patterson. Michelle Pesca is in charge of special projects for Peachfish Productions. I do not have the names of all the people who helped me produce this song for NPR. I'm going to say either Neil Rausch or Manoli Weatherall had a big hand in the audio mixing. I forgot who sang it, but they're good. They're swinging. They're swinging like a fence, ladies and gentlemen. To advertise on The Gist, go to advertisecast.com/The Gist. Doom Peru, G Peru, Do Peru, and thanks for listening.